This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, this is David. Halloween is all about having fun with things that normally scare us, like zombies and ghosts. But what about the fears that don't come with costumes? Therapy can be a helpful way to face those fears and work through them. After all, sometimes the scariest thing is not facing our fears at all and letting them hold us back. If you have ever wondered if therapy can help you become the best version of yourself, I recommend trying BetterHelp. It's all online, making it convenient and flexible to fit any schedule. Just answer a quick questionnaire, and you'll be matched with a licensed therapist. Plus, you can switch therapists anytime without any extra cost. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/living today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P .com/living. Thank you. Welcome to Our Sunday Talks, an exclusive series for the patrons of the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's talk was edited and adapted from The Philosophy of Despair by David Starr Jordan, published in 1902. The poetry of Omar Khayyam is perhaps our best expression of the sadness and the grandeur of insoluble problems. It is the sweetness of philosophical sorrow, which has no kinship with misery or distress. In the strains of the saddest music, the soul finds the keenest delight. The same sweet, sorrowful pleasure is felt in the play of mind about the riddles which it cannot solve. In the presence of the infinite problem of life, the voice of science is dumb, for science is the coordinate and corrected expression of human experience, and human experience must stop with the limitations of human life. As human beings, we cannot conceive of space as actually without limit, nor can we imagine any limiting conditions. We cannot think of a period before time began, nor of a state in which time shall be no more. The mind fails before the idea of time's eternal continuity. So time becomes to us merely the sequence of the earthly events in which we and our ancestors have taken part. Though the meaning of time, space, and existence is beyond our reach, the human heart demands some sort of solution to the infinite problem. We find in life a power for action, limited though this power may be. Life is action, and action is impossible if devoid of motive or hope. It is my purpose here to indicate, at least in part, science's answer to the philosophy of despair. As for a direct reply, science has none. We cannot argue against a singer or a poet. The poet sings of what he or she feels. But science speaks only of what we have experienced. We feel infinity, but we cannot know it, for to the highest human wisdom, the ultimate truths of the universe are no nearer to us than to the child. Science knows no ultimate truths. Everything ultimate is beyond the reach of humankind. And all that we know must be stated in terms of our experience. But as to human experience and conduct, science has a word to say. Therefore, science can speak of the causes and results of pessimism. it can touch the practical side of the riddle of life by asking certain questions, the answers to which lie within the province of human experience. Among these are the following. Why is there a philosophy of despair? Can despair be wrought into healthful life? In what part of the universe are you, and what are you doing? Personal despair or discouragement may rise from failure of strength or failure of plans. This is a matter of everyday occurrence. The best laid schemes of mice and men generally go wrong, no doubt, but this fact has little to do with the philosophy of pessimism. Very few young men or young women of strength and feeling fail to pass through a period of pessimism. With some, it is merely an affectation caught from the cheap literature of decadence. With others, pessimism has deeper roots and finds its expression in the poetry or philosophy of real despair. This adolescent pessimism cannot be wrought into action. The mood disappears when real action is demanded. But if action is impossible, the mood remains, and here rises the despair of the highly educated. The purpose of knowledge is action, but to refuse action is to secure time for the acquisition of more knowledge. It is written in the very structure of the brain that each impression of the senses must bring with it the impulse to act. To resist this impulse is in turn to destroy it and to substitute a dull soul ache in its place. At best, the tendency of acquiring large knowledge, not vitalized by practical experience, is to spend oneself in cynical criticism, in futile efforts to tear down, without feeling the higher obligation to build up. For it is the essence of this form of pessimism to feel that there is nothing on earth worth the trouble of building. The real is only a sneering comment on the ideal, and our life is too short to make any action worthwhile. According to Schopenhauer, we move across the stage of life stung by appetite and goaded by desire, in pain unceasing. The sole respite from pain is the instant in which desire is lost in satisfaction. To do away with desire is to destroy pain, but it also destroys existence. With death only comes complete relief from pain. Thus, the pessimist tells us that the only reality in life is pain. But surely this is not the truth. The person who knows no reality save appetite has never known life at all. The realities in life are love and action, not desire, but the exercise of our appointed tasks. Our sensations and power to act must go together. We can know nothing that we cannot somehow weave into action. To weave knowledge into action is the antidote for ennui. To plan, to hope, to do, to accomplish the full measure of our powers, whatever they may be, is to turn away from nirvana to real life. A useful person, a helpful person, an active person in any sense, even though their activity be misdirected or harmful, is always a hopeful person. The feeling that the only reality in life is pain is a sign not of philosophical acuteness, but of bodily undervitalization. The nervous system is too feeble for the body that it has to move. To act is to make the environment your servant. Its pressure is no longer pain, but joy. The concessions which life has made to time and space are the source of life's glory and power. The function of the nervous system is to carry from the environment to the brain the impressions of truth, so that action may be true and safe. Pain and pleasure are both incidental to proper action. The one drives, the other coaxes us toward the path of wisdom. If pain is in excess of joy in our experience, it is because we have wandered from the path of normal activity and right doing. By right doing, I mean that action which makes for abundance of life, and abundance of life means fullness of joy. Though life be sad, yet there's joy in the living it, was the word of the ancient Greeks. The life of the individual is dynamic, not static, not a condition, but a movement. It is a rush of forces, an evolution toward greater activities and higher experiences. Another source of pessimism is the reaction from unearned pleasures and from spurious joys. It is the business of the senses to translate realities, to tell the truth about us in terms of human experience. Every real pleasure has its cost in some form of nervous activity. Only in doing and loving is permanent satisfaction found. There is no permanent state of happiness. Its joys must be won afresh with each new happy day. What we get, we must earn, if it is to be really ours. Most of the philosophy of despair, the longing to know the meaning of the unattainable, vanishes with an active outdoor life and the consequent flow of good health. For a degree of optimism is a necessary accompaniment of health. It is as natural as animal heat, and is the mental reflex of it. Pessimism arises from depression, or irritation, or a failure of the nerves. It is a symptom of lowered vitality expressed in terms of the mind. There is also a philosophical pessimism, as I have already said, over and above all merely physical conditions, and not dependent on them. But whatever the causes of pessimism, whether arising in speculative philosophy, in nervous disease, or in personal failure, it can never be wrought into sound and helpful life. To live effectively implies the belief that life is worth living, and no one who leads a worthy life has ever for a moment doubted this. Such an expression as worth living has in fact no real meaning. To act and to love are the twin functions of the human body and soul. To refuse these functions is to make oneself incapable of them. It is, in a sense, to die while the body is still alive. To refuse these functions is to make a misery out of existence, and a life of ennui is doubtless not worth living. Today is your day and mine, the only day we have, the day in which we play our part. What our part may signify in the great whole we may not understand, but we are here to play it, and now is the time. This we know, it is a part of action, not of whining. It is a part of love, not cynicism. It is for us to express love in terms of human helpfulness. This we know, for we have learned from sad experience that any other course of life leads towards weakness and misery. What then are you doing under these blue skies? The thing you do should be for you the most important thing in the world. If you could do something better than you are doing now, everything considered, why are you not doing it? If everyone did the very best they knew, most of the problems of human life would be already settled. if each one did the best they knew, they would be on the highway to greater knowledge, and therefore still better action. The world's redemption is waiting only for each of us to lend a hand. It does not matter if the greatest thing for you to do be not in itself great. The best preparation for greatness comes in doing faithfully the little things that lie nearest, for the nearest is the greatest in most human lives. It lives in the fresh, unspoiled confidence of the natural man and woman who finds in the world a world of action and joy, and time all too short for the fullness of life which it demands. Optimism in life is a good working hypothesis. To be optimistic is not necessarily to be foolish, to lose the clearness of the horizon, the sense of values, by centering all on self. True optimism is the open-eyed faith that all is worthwhile, and that our own part in it is worth playing to the end. What if there are so many of us in the ranks of humanity? What if the individual be lost in the mass as a pebble cast into the seven seas? Would you choose a world so small as to leave room for only you and your satellites? Would you ask for problems of life so tame that you could grasp them without effort? Every meanest day is the conflux of two eternities. In this center of all time and space, for the moment, it is I, it is you, that stand. Great is eternity, but it is made up of time. Could we blot out one day in the midst of time, eternity could be no more. The smallest individual alone has their place within the infinite omnipotence. It is a question not of hope or despair, but of truth. Not of optimism nor of pessimism, but of wisdom. Wisdom is knowing what to do next. Virtue is doing it.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.